It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. As anyone from Georgia knows, football is life. Whether you are a Falcons fan or maybe you're crazy about the dogs, you know sports are a huge part of Southern and American culture, but you might not realize how much your obsession with your team makes you, you. Erin Tarver is a professor of philosophy at Emory University. She explores sports influence on lives and fandom. In her new book, it's called The Eye in Team, Sports Fandom and the Reproduction of Identity. And she joins me now. Hi there, Erin.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you. And also with us is Vicki Michaelis, a professor of sports journalism at the University of Georgia. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, Celeste.
So, Erin, you have been a sports fan, sounds like, in your family, even going back generations.
That's right. I do not remember the very first time I went to a sporting event.
You were too young.
Always part of life where I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
And you guys, obviously, weren't a dog fan, but...
No, I'm sorry to say that.
Yes. But it sounds like it became almost a ritual in your life. Can you sort of describe the ritual of football, of that day of football, how that went?
Wow. So there's certainly the day of the game always involved a set of standard practices that we engage in. And so people who study sports fans make a big deal about the fact that this is ritualistic behavior. We put on our special clothing. We go to certain sacred space almost.
With other worshipers.
Exactly. there are certain chants and cheers that we engage in. And for individual sports fans, there's usually things that are specific to their family as well that they do. But for me, it wasn't just about the day of the game, but about the entire week. And I think most really devoted sports fans will tell you this, that, of course, going to the game is sort of the pinnacle of your sports fan practice. But that if you're a real fan, that every day is somehow involved in this. So there's a program that you watch on television or you read the stats on what happened in practice on the day before, or you have bought new decor for your office or your Christmas tree or your bedroom or whatever it is. There are a variety of ways in which sports makes its way into all of the minutiae of fans' lives.
Let's actually hear, this is Jake Mady. He grew up a Green Bay Packers fan, and he tells us about a few memories of being a lifelong sports fan.
Growing up in Green Bay in Wisconsin, going to a lot of good Packer games, things like that with the family. Remember a lot of cool games going back to the 96 playoff games with the Packers against the San Francisco 49ers, beating them. It was like 33 degrees in the rain in December going into the playoffs.
So, Vicki, you have been covering sports for a very long time, and that means covering these fans, right?
Not necessarily, but certainly observing the fans. I think I have a very different perspective than Erin would, because as a sports journalist, you are asked to leave your fandom at home. So I don't necessarily, write about sports fans, but I've certainly observed them along the way.
To what extent is a game's a reflection of the fan base, or a team a reflection of the fan base? Are the Yankees changed in character because of the character of their fans, for example?
I think very much so. They respond to their fans in a way that they adapt what their fans want them to be in many ways. And I think because it's all about the almighty dollar, the owners, the general managers all have to respond to what the fans want as well. And so therefore, the community's identity shapes the team's identity in many ways.
And Erin, one of the things which is very interesting that you talk about in your book is the barrier to entry, right? That people are always trying to figure out if you're a real fan or not. Why is that?
That's an interesting question. I think that some theorists of popular culture talk about it this way, that things like sports fandom are a means of cultivating what they call popular cultural capital. So that means that your ability, that's a great way of summarizing it. It loses its weight. It loses its significance if just everybody is allowed to be in the club, right? And so, if you could think about it analogously to somebody who is like a wine aficionado or something like that. if everybody knew how to do this particular thing, it wouldn't have the kind of social status that it has. And so sports, because it's accessible to everyone through television and radio and newspaper and all of this stuff, in order to retain that same kind of social significance, sports fans develop these ways of testing one another to determine whether they're real fans or not. And so for many men in particular, this involves knowledge acquisition and testing one another on their sports trivia knowledge, for example, and whether you can name, you know, who was it who was the starting quarterback in, you know, Super Bowl 25 or something like that, or who were all of the teams in the SEC, et cetera.
Right. So I wonder, Vicky, if that you've had that experience, especially as a woman covering sports. We know that that can be a sort of fraught field, right? So have you seen this being tested on your sports knowledge?
Pretty much every time I meet someone and tell them what I do, I get a test of something, and it's usually about their own team. So yes, I've seen that daily.
Do you give in? Do you tell them the right statistics to prove who you are?
It depends on the situation. If I feel like making a statement about, you know, whether that should be a test of whether I should be allowed into the you know, sports media, I probably resist it. But if it's a friendly social situation, I'll give in.
That is Vicky Michaelis. Do not test her on sports trivia because she has been covering it a long time. She's a sports journalism professor at UGA, and Erin Tarver teaches philosophy at Emory University. You know, Vicky, every time a team makes it into the playoffs, there are complaints about fair weather fans, right? I mean, people who just jumped on board because the team's winning. But I wonder, to a team, what's the best fan to have? Does it matter to them what kind of fan base they have?
The best fan to have is the fan that spends a lot of money whenever they're...
That's it? Doesn't matter how loyal and how much they love?
No, I really don't think so. I mean, it really is about the almighty dollar. And so the best fan is the one that buys the tickets and buys a lot of beer while they're at the game and buys the jerseys and buys their kids' jerseys and their babies' onesies. And I mean, obviously, you want to have fans who do what Erin was talking about in terms of that initiation of their children and their entire family, because just like any other brand, if you can get them while they're young, you're going to have them for the rest of their lives.
Well, on that note, let's hear from Chad. He grew up watching football in Nashville, and he says football is his sport.
It's a great community. You have a loyal fan base, and the sport is awesome to watch. So, you know, you have families who are generational in terms of football and being a fan of one specific team. Nashville is relatively young still, but yeah, it does bring back good memories of growing up.
Which brings us back to you, Erin, because that loyalty can cut both ways, right? What if somebody is in a family that's a fan of a certain team and the kid goes to a different college, or the kid suddenly likes a different team, right? I mean, why do these loyalties spring up that sometimes disrupt families?
That's a great question. And I think that it can happen for a variety of reasons. What I will say is that it's... probably a minority of cases in which people do not maintain the loyalty of the fan base that they're raised with.
I thought you were going to say it's a minority of cases where people care about the team that much that they would.
No, I mean, what we tend to see is that if you ask people about, you know, how they became fans of the team that they're fans of, the vast majority of people, anyway, that I've encountered have a story about being raised by their family in a particular fan base, right? And so it might be because it's where they live, but it might be because it's where their parents are from, for example. But certainly there are cases in which individuals, say, disavow the loyalty of their families. And usually when they're doing that, it's indicative of some kind of larger statement that they're trying to make about their relationship to their family.
It sounds like you're talking about a religion. That sounds like you're leaving the family religion.
And I think that's a great analogy for what's going on in many of these cases. The role that sports fandom plays in the lives of sports fans is not unlike, for many fans, a religion. And so I think we see when we see family rifts, say, about sports allegiance, this is really just indicative of the fact that sports fandom is, in the contemporary United States, one of the primary means that fans today use to tell themselves who they are.
It's really interesting. Aaron is talking about sports in light of it being sort of like a religion or a worship. Vicky has been talking about it as pure capitalist corporate structure. Fascinating. Aaron Tarver is philosophy professor at Emory University. Her new book is The Eye in Team, Sports Fandom and the Reproduction of Identity. And Vicky Michaelis is a sports journalism professor at UGA. Vicky and Aaron, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.